I decided this morning, well, I decided earlier in the week when I started looking at the gospel reading appointed for today from Luke chapter 14. I decided that there should be a greeting card for preachers returning from holiday on Sunday, September the 1st. And the greeting card should say, "Welcome back. You get to preach this morning on Luke 14, 1 and 7 to 14. Ha ha. Because, seriously, it's kind of a strange, awkward, confusing, slightly twisted story that Jesus tells in Luke chapter 14. And I'm kind of hoping one of you wants to get up and preach on it this morning, because I'd prefer to sit down and listen. No takers? Such an opportunity. I mean, he tells this weird story about a wedding banquet, okay? And he suggests that when you go to a wedding banquet, you should scheme. You should scheme by going and taking the lowest seat, the position of dishonor, the place where the neglected and those who are kind of invisible are assigned to sit. And you should go sit there, because if you take the seat of honor, then when the host of the banquet shows up, they may look at you and say, "What are you doing sitting in the back pew? That's the chosen place. You need to come and sit up at the front." And you'll be really embarrassed because you got here especially early. Well, maybe you didn't get here especially early, but it's the most sought after pew in the church, the back pew. So you scheme, you try to figure out, okay, how can I make sure that I don't get embarrassed at this banquet? And that seems a really odd thing for Jesus to suggest that we might do. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down in the place of honor in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you, may come and say to you, "Give this person your place." And then in disgrace, you have to start to move to the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, "Friend, move up higher." Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. Doesn't that strike you as weird? And in fact, it gets worse. Because Jesus then goes on to speak to the person in whose home he is presently sharing a meal, this leader of the Pharisees. And he goes on and he tells him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. Instead, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you." So he goes on to completely undercut the whole idea of scheming. Okay? The spiritual life is not about scheming. It's not about planning to get honored and gloried. It's not about planning to figure out how you can accumulate blessings for yourself. It's about giving with no hope of return. It's about pouring yourself out for another when you know that that other is not able to repay you and benefit you in return. So on the one hand, he seems to promote scheming to get something for yourself. And on the other hand, he immediately turns around and pulls the rug out from underneath scheming and say, the spiritual life is actually not about getting something for yourself. It's about giving with no hope of return. Okay, I'm going on holiday now. So I think, as always with parables, when Jesus tells these little stories. It is important not to press the details too hard. He's trying to make a specific or a particular or a concrete point. And it's important to see the context in which Jesus tells parables. Luke says, on one occasion, when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees. Okay, I think that's important. This is a leader of the Pharisees. A leader of the Pharisees is a person of prestige, a person of power, a person of influence. In fact, a person of honor, a person of respect, a person who you would anticipate would be given, shown immediately to the seat of honor. So there's a contrast here that Jesus wants us to see. When he comes to the end, when we come to the end of this story, Jesus says, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Who are they? They are not the leader of the Pharisees. The leader of the Pharisees is a person who is noticed, a person who is paid attention to, a person who is capable of making his way in the world without help. In Jesus' day, even in our own day, the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind are people who know they need some assistance. We have, what do we call that? A hearing assistive set here in the sound system. If you are having trouble with your hearing, you can turn your hearing aid to something and it helps you hear. When Linda arrives at church on Sunday, she needs an arm to help her find her pew. And she has Jenny's arm this morning, which is lovely. But what we need to understand is this isn't about Linda any more than it is about every one of us. We are all the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. The problem is that a leader of the Pharisees doesn't know that, because he has the acclaim of his community. He has the prestige and the capacity to avoid recognizing his need for help. You know, I've been in the spring, this coming spring, spring of 2020, I will have been doing this job, working in the church full time, for 40 years. 40 years. I started when I was 12. 40 years. Imagine that. 40 years. And you know what? In all those 40 years, there has not been one day when I had any idea what I'm doing. It's true. It's not false humility. That is absolutely true. After 40 years, I have no clue how to do this job. Every day is like stepping out into this incredible unknown something, and something's going to come at you, and you're going to go, oh my goodness, what do I do with that? Where did that come from? Well, I've never seen that before. I've never heard that one before. Oh my goodness, that person, their life is such a, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to face that? I have no idea what I'm doing. But you know what? I'm not alone. Because you don't have any idea what you're doing either. The people who know what they're doing are the leaders of the Pharisees. And they're the ones you want. You know, the ones you want to be scared of are the experts. The ones, you know, there were a few days when I knew what I was doing. Those were bad days. I was a dangerous person when I knew what I was doing. It lasted for, I don't know, what do you think, 5 years? Six? There were a few years in there where I knew what I was doing. They were not good years. They were the years of danger. The years when I should have been put away and locked up for a while. So every day facing the struggles of life, facing the confusions of the world around me, facing the unknown, stepping into this kind of strange world of life, there's something that I have to do, and it's what we are encouraged to do in the letter to the Hebrews that Caleb read in his long pants. We have to, every day, moment by moment by moment, and it's why we come here. We come here because we know we need something that we just don't have all by ourselves. We need help. We do. We need an assisting arm. We need a hearing assistive set. We need a resource from beyond ourselves that will give us some capacity to be the people that we were created to be. Because by ourselves, left to our own devices, there is no such thing as a spiritually self-made person. You cannot spiritually pull yourself up by your bootstraps and barrel on through and make a go of it. You just can't. Because the spiritual life, this thing that we celebrate when we gather together on Sunday, and the reason why it's important that, as I said to the children earlier, that, you know, Labor Day's for tomorrow. Today is rest day. Labor Day is when we concentrate on the importance of hard work, and there is a place for hard work. I believe in it. But we're the place where we tell you to rest. We're the place where we tell you to just take a break, stop. Just take a deep breath. Because when we truly rest, that's when we find our true nature. That's when we discover who we truly are as beings created in the image of God. And that, you know, it's interesting, this thing about you'll be exalted, you won't be exalted. And you think, well, what does that mean? The people who seek the places of honor at the banquet, they do so because why? They want to be exalted. And they know what it means to be exalted. To be exalted means to be noticed, to be praised, to be raised up, to be given what you want, to be given all the toys and trinkets of life. You know that guy, what's his name? The guy who got in all kinds of trouble and he killed himself in jail? Epstein. Epstein. I saw a list, not a full list, but a short list of his, they call them assets. $56 million in cash, homes in Los Angeles, New York, Paris, Virgin Islands. I think I've forgotten a few. But the one I really loved was his cars. How much are his cars worth? $18.5 million. How many cars is that? That's a lot of cars. Those are expensive cars. How could you have $18.5 million worth of cars? That's what it means to be exalted in the eyes of the world. You can go out and buy $18.5 million worth of cars. What does it mean to be exalted by God? Well, you know what? I don't know. And I don't think you're supposed to know. Jesus says it very, very enigmatically at the end of this passage. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. What does that look like? I don't know. I don't think you're supposed to know. Because if I tell you what it means to be raised up by God, what it means to be given the place of honor at the banquet by God, you'll all go looking for that. You'll all trying to be that. Oh, it means to be peaceful. Okay, I'll be peaceful. Or it means to be really loving. Okay, I'll be really loving. But you can't do that. All you can do is recognize that you have been invited to a banquet. It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder how often we think of ourselves as those who've been invited to a banquet. I've been to 3 weddings this summer. And you know what? Everybody was happy. They were happy events. People were filled with joy. People were warmed. I didn't hear anybody fighting at any of the weddings I was at. I didn't hear anybody whining or complaining. The bride at one of them had a reason to whine and complain because she couldn't get the wedding ring on her finger, right? Because of her bee wasp sting. Finger was all swollen up like a balloon. So we put it on the right hand, but she'll get over that. It'll be okay. They were happy events. They were full of life, full of energy, full of joy, and full of celebration. And nobody was kind of saying, wow, look at me, I'm so great. They were just there to celebrate love and to celebrate relationship and faithfulness. And for at least one of them, not just for one of them, wasn't the first time. And yet, you know, the marriage that wasn't for the first time, there are people from far away, they got up and did it again. And you might think, well, that's kind of dumb. And maybe it is, but it speaks to the indomitability of the human spirit, of the desire to commit for life, of the desire to really step forward and be present to another person again, even though the first time or the first two times or the first however many times, you know, it didn't work out the same. It didn't work out the way it had been planned. And yet you get up in the morning and you go again. That's what it means to live in the kingdom. That's what it means to live as a guest of the wedding banquet. It means to have the humility to recognize. Don't ever think of humility as, ooh, I'm no good. Don't ever think of humility as, ooh, I have more needs than somebody else. Humility is just honesty. It's telling the truth. It's being truthful about the reality that we are not going to be the loving people we were created to be without receiving the gift of love, without opening our hearts to the gift of that deep, sustaining love that never fails, that never goes away, that never lets us down, that never ceases, that never stops. It's from 1 Corinthians 13, inscribed on Heather's mother's tombstone in Somanos. Love never ends. It's an indomitable force. Physical death doesn't kill it. Failure doesn't stop it. Human weakness doesn't impede it. The only thing that stops it is the heart of a Pharisee. And the heart of a Pharisee says, I don't need it. I can do it on my own. So when you come forward for communion, you come not to say, look at me, I'm so great. You come to say, I acknowledge my need. I acknowledge and open to the reality that I need to receive, because it's only in receiving that I have any power or hope of truly giving. Amen.